This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show. Thanks for joining me again this Tuesday for another hour of old-time radio. We'll begin this week with the Philip Morris Playhouse, an episode from March 11th, 1949, titled The Lady from the Sea. Then it's Believe It or Not with How Many Happy Days. We're going to take a break from suspense this week and hear from Favorite Story. This episode's titled The Mystery of Room 323, first aired June 12th, 1948.
Johnny presents The Philip Morris Playhouse, produced, edited, and directed by William Spear. Tonight's star, Marlena Dietrich. Marlena Dietrich as star, we bring you The Lady from the Sea, tonight's production in the Philip Morris Playhouse.
When I woke up that morning, I was frightened. I had been dreaming that there was a shadow over me. It was large and black and was strangely shaped. I could not think what made such a shadow. Then I remembered what it was, and I started to run. It was the shadow of a ship.
Lily, what is it? You scared the living daylights out of a body. What is it, dearie?
It was a dream.
Oh.
It's all right, Mrs. Maloney. I had a bad dream. Woke me up.
Well, now, go back to sleep for a bit. It's not 9 yet. You need your rest, and Mr. Taggart's taking you to an interview.
Did he say today?
The script just arrived. He wants you to read it this morning before you go out to Hemisphere Studio to meet the producer.
I forgot it was today.
Now, I'll put on the nightlight in your dressing room, fix the door so there's a sliver of light. Then you won't be scared again, and you can go back to sleep.
No, I'm not going back to sleep.
Now, Miss Lily, you lie there and think and get cross, and that brings out the little lines on your forehead. And you want to look your best.
Stop it. Don't fuss over me. Bring me some coffee, please, and the morning papers, all of them, and hurry. I wasn't thinking then about the dream. I wanted to see if my name was in the column. But on the front page was a photograph. The picture of a ship with big black letters across the hull. The Lady from the Sea. Old cafe, built like a ship at the end of Paradise Pier, sold for movie sets. Favorite meeting place of Hollywood stars in the day of silent film. Will be background for thriller based on sensational Craig Douglas killing, which shook movie colony in 1929. Hemisphere will produce murder picture. Mrs. Maloney?
Yes, Mrs. Maloney.
That script here?
Yes.
Give it to me.
Well, it isn't a whole script. There's only 80
pages. Give it to me.
Oh, well, now you're supposed to read the part of Norma.
Norma?
Yes, she's killed. The wife. Oh, it's a lovely title for a picture now, isn't it?
The Lady from the Sea. A story about a murder set on the Lady from the Sea. About a woman named Norma who was killed there. It couldn't be the true story, I told myself. Nobody knew the true story except Craig and me. But I was to read the part of Norma. And I was now the same age Norma had been then. I started to read. Fade in, title Hollywood 29. There's this back by a series of shots establishing the period. Theatre Marquise, Janet Gaynor and Charles Sorrell in Seventh Heaven. Emiliani's in The Last Commandment. So over the montage, a jingly rendition of When Francis Dances With Me. As the title fades from the screen, we dissolve to long shot Paradise Pier Night. In the foreground, the penny arcade from which the music we hear is coming. Two lovers, Doug and Grateful, are walking past the arcade arm in arm. Camera moves in medium close and trucks with him. But the two lovers were really Craig and Lily. Craig and me. That spring, we had dinner nearly every night at the Lady from the Sea. And we walked so many nights on the pier, arm in arm.
A penny here, a penny a shot, a penny a rock.
Come on, sweetheart. Let's squander a penny in the fortune machine, huh?
We already know our fortune.
Yeah, we're going to live happily ever after.
Not if Norma has her way.
Forget about Norma. Listen to this. I have a warm and loving nature, but I'm also practical. Now, how do they know?
It's obvious. Now, mine.
Go on, read it.
You have high ideals, but are much too impetuous.
And a good thing, too. Come on, darling, let's take a walk. Clear to the end of the pier.
First, I want to see the picture slip over in the movie machine.
Come look at Charlie's got his foot in the spittoon. A lady standing behind a blind as naked as Eve. Go on, Captain. Oh, look. There's Craig Douglas.
Wait. Yes, sir.
Oh, now we're in for it. Come on, Lily, let's run.
Oh, coward. I wouldn't have run.
I don't want people gossiping about you and me. So far, we've kept you out of the papers.
Maybe I want to be in the papers.
As an actress, yes. Or as my wife. But not like this. Oh, Lily, someday you'll play the Lady from the Sea, the Ibsen. What is it now? Oh, yes. He took from his pocket a key ring.
He took from his pocket a key ring and drew a ring that he always wore from his finger. And he took a small ring he had. Those two he put on the key ring.
And then he said, we would wed ourselves to the sea.
That's the only kind of wedding we'll ever have. Norma will never...
She'll give me a divorce. Just be patient, darling. Don't worry about Norma. Just leave everything to me.
Except for the name, it was all there in the script, word for word. And there were other scenes I remembered, word for word. The scene when the young actress called Gretel in the script, who was really me, was her first big part in the picture. And the scene when the crew on the picture presented the actress with an onyx-handled paper knife. There was a gold plate on the side, engraved with her name and the name of the picture. When you pressed the plate, the thin, tapered blade of Swedish steel sprang out. How well I remember that knife. It was the very evening that knife had been presented to me that we met to talk about the divorce, Craig and Norma and I, in the little deck house aboard the Lady from the Sea. Then Craig was called down to the dining salon, and when Norma and I were alone, she turned on me.
You can talk until doomsday, but I'm not going to divorce Craig, ever.
Then he'll have to divorce you. I'm sure he has grounds for divorce, Norma.
Possibly. Before I see him marrying a conniving, greedy would-be like you, I'll...
Yes? Go on. What will you do?
I'll kill you. I'll kill you.
Stay where you are, Norma. I warn you. Don't touch me. Don't!
I'll fix that beautiful face so you'll never want to look at it again.
I told you!
Not to touch me.
Somehow, I had a knife in my hand. A little onyx-handled knife. And when Norma came at me, I pressed the gold plate and the thin blade had sprung out. And somehow, I can't imagine, but I had buried it deep in Norma's throat. She turned and looked at me only a second with a kind of surprise. Then she fell. And there was blood dripping into her hair. And suddenly, Craig was there.
I thought I heard... Oh, Lily. What have you done? What have you done?
She said she'd kill me.
Oh, darling.
Oh, get out of here quickly without being seen. Get out of here.
What are you doing?
This knife has your name on it. I have to get rid of it.
How?
Throw it into the sea. Get home, darling, and stay there. After I throw away the knife, I'll have to phone the police.
No, Craig, they'll say you did it.
Leave that to me. So long as they don't find out that you... It would ruin you.
I won't let you do it.
You will. Lily, do you think I care what happens to me as long as you're safe? I don't care if I have to go to prison to make certain you're safe. And you're going to wait for me.
I was shaking. I was reading all this in the picture script. The script for a picture that was going into production today. After all my troubles and waiting for the opportunity for a comeback, they were offering me a picture in which I would reenact this murder for my own life. Craig had written it. And he said he loved me.
Marlene Dietrich in Act Two of The Lady from the Sea, tonight's production in the Philip Morris Playhouse.
It was all in that script, scene for scene, word for word, as only he and I knew it had happened. But I didn't need a script to remember Craig's trial. To remember how he confessed that he killed Norma. He said that during a quarrel, she struck him and he lost his head. No premeditation. She was known to be a hellion and a bad drinker. His lawyers based his whole defense on that one point.
I didn't mean to kill her. God is my witness. I lost my head.
But the prosecution based its case for premeditation. For murder in the first degree. On the disappearance of the murder weapon.
And what was the weapon, Mr. Duggan?
I've told you it was an ice pick.
An ice pick?
Yes.
And what happened to that ice pick?
I don't know.
I think I can suggest what happened to it. I think that coolly, cold-bloodedly, you pulled the weapon out of your dead wife's throat and disposed of it according to plan. Threw it into the sea.
But Craig won. You can call it a victory. The jury brought in a verdict for murder in the second degree. The sentence was 20 years. And that same evening, after the verdict, I saw Craig. We sat for a long time quietly. I had my face in my hands.
Oh, don't cry, darling. Our time's almost up. And you're not to come here again.
I won't see you again.
Well, we've been lucky to keep your name out of this up till now. I don't want to take any more chances. But I'll write through my lawyer, and you'll write to me.
I'll be old by the time you come back.
You'll be a great actress by then, and that'll make you happy. That's worth the 20 years to me.
Oh, Craig. But what if you're wrong? What if you gave up your freedom for nothing? And it was for nothing. Because that year, sound came to motion pictures, and heads rolled, mine among them. All of us went, unless you were already a big name, already on top. I wasn't. It had been a long, slow grind to get within sight of the top. It was a fast ride down, way down. So I didn't write to Craig at first because I was ashamed. Later, I didn't write because, well, it was something I wanted to forget. But I didn't forget what he had said about my future as an actress. It took years of waiting, scheming, before I had my first real break, singing in a New York club. In a small way, I had a success that got me back to the coast. I opened in a club on the Strip, and the papers were full of the comeback of Lily Dawn. Then I came home one night. I was staying at the Garden of Bala.
Hello, Lily.
She pushed right into Billy. I couldn't stop him.
I knew she'd be glad to see an old friend after 20 years.
Please leave, Mrs. Maloney.
If you say so. But I'll be right in my room if you need me.
What do you want?
You, Lily. I still want you.
Now, don't let's talk like idiots, Craig. That's all over.
Yes. It was all over for you rather quickly, wasn't it? Just a matter of hours after I was in prison.
Now, Craig, you don't...
You found it difficult to write to me. Was that it, Lily?
Yes, exactly.
I got to writing the last 5 years. I've written something quite remarkable. A story that ought to be front page news.
I wish I had something for you, Craig. Some money, but I haven't anything.
Oh, from the newspapers, I thought you were doing all right. Not as well as I predicted, but still.
I spend every cent I make. You know this business. They 10% me to death. My agent, my business manager, a press agent. I can't even pay my taxes.
Isn't that tough?
I'm gambling everything to get a part in a picture.
But for an old friend, Lily.
Why should I? I don't owe you anything.
Well, let's put it that I loaned you 20 years to pay off a very pressing debt.
Let's put it that you gave me 20 years. You don't have any claim on me. And there isn't any way you can connect me with...
Murder, Lily?
You haven't got anything that will implicate me.
No, Lily. I wouldn't be too sure. Good night, Lily.
What would Craig do? The knife was gone. He'd thrown it into the sea. And he'd been so careful to keep my name out of the case. Almost no one knew that I had even known Craig. But now my agent had sent a script. The Lady from the Sea, an unfinished script, only 80 pages, but word for word, scene for scene. It was the story of Craig and Norma and me. And I was to play the part of Norma.
What do you want, the lead or Lily? You gotta face facts.
I won't play it, Taggart.
It's a small part, I grant you. Lily, and you're killed halfway through the picture, but me, lead me, honey. There's an Academy Award in it for supporting actress, and you can do it.
I'm telling you, it's not because the part is small. I just don't like it.
But it was written for you special. The author, he told me so himself. Oh, you know Craig Douglas, the guy that did time for bumping off his own wife. He said you were the only actress in town who could do justice to the part in Norma.
I won't do it. How many times do I have to tell you?
Okay. Okay. Have it your own way. But before I tell the producer it's no soap, do me one favor.
What?
Craig Douglas told me he thought you might turn it down. I told him he was off his nut. He's a mysterious...
And what did he say?
Well, he said you should talk to him before you threw the part away. He said he could give you at least one good reason why not playing the part would be professional suicide for you. Curtains.
So I took a cab to 620 North Corona Drive, Beverly Hills. Between selling the scripts and the Lady from the Sea, Craig was doing very well indeed. He was living in a garden apartment by the pool, number 18.
Oh, come in, Lily. Come to talk story?
I read your script.
And you didn't like it, huh? Sit down, Lily. I'm sorry. That part was tailored for you.
What did you want to tell me?
Well, I thought technically you might give me a few pointers on the stabbing scene, how both of the women would feel.
I didn't come here for jokes. What do you want?
I want you to take that part, Lily. And I thought you might, after I discussed the script with you. Especially certain scenes that are missing.
I know the script wasn't finished.
Oh, I don't mean the end of the script. The ending depends on what I do with certain other missing scenes.
What scenes?
Here, I'll show you. Oh, on page 70, if you remember, Doug has run up to the deckhouse, found his wife dead, and has taken the knife out of her throat. Holding the knife, he talks to the actress he loves. His last line in the scene is, you're going to be a great actress. If I have to go to prison to make certain you are, and you're going to wait for me. Then the actress exits, as you see here. The script reads, scenes 143 to 156... Not yet written.
What does it mean?
Not yet written means not yet written. I haven't quite decided how to handle those scenes. They're the scenes showing how Doug disposes of the knife.
You threw it into the sea.
Well, there are several possibilities. That's the obvious one. And it is credible. You believed it, didn't you, Lily?
You did throw it into the sea.
Or I could have Doug hide the knife somewhere on that ship. Somewhere on the Lady from the Sea. As a kind of guarantee that the actress he loved would wait for him.
There's no place to hide it.
Only one sure place.
The police went over that ship with a fine-tooth comb. There wasn't an inch they missed.
Well, they were thorough. I would say they missed about 6 cubic inches.
You didn't hide it. I don't believe you.
Well, you can see how these missing scenes affect the end of the story. Naturally, the part of Norma doesn't go to the end. It finishes rather abruptly on page 80. But if you're curious about the rest...
You didn't hide the knife. You threw it into the sea. You told
me. If you play the part of Norma, then you'll find out if I told the truth.
Taggart told the producer that day that I would play the part. If the knife was still there somewhere on the Lady from the Sea, I had to find it before anyone else could. It had my name on it. Norma's blood. Maybe they couldn't prove anything with it after 20 years. They couldn't prove murder. But it would be in all the papers, and it would be curtains on all my hopes for a career. I had 10 days shooting altogether on the part of Norma, and all my scenes were to be shot on location, actually aboard the Lady from the Sea. But I couldn't search the ship, because Craig was always there. Not only because he was the writer, he was acting a small part in the picture, too. So every morning, when I reported to the set, Craig was there. He watched me every second, every day. And when I left at night, Craig was still there, still watching. Then it was my last day, and Craig still had not written the missing scene. My last scene was a scene in the deckhouse, where Norma is murdered by Gretel, as she is called in the script.
All right, we'll need it again. Honey, same thing. Play it quiet this time.
All right, Mr. Lundberg, I'll try.
I don't feel you're holding it in enough. You're sore at Norma, but you're holding it in. And you're a cook who knows how to keep your feelings to yourself, you understand?
I think I do.
Mm. Miss Dorn, you were great on the run through just before lunch. I want it just the same way.
All right, Mr. Lundberg, but it's... aren't we going to have the knife? I can't act very afraid of her if she doesn't have the knife.
Perhaps.
You!
Where's that knife?
Why, it's right here when we broke for lunch, Mr. Lundberg.
All right, get it. Meantime, Lily, let's go through it again, huh? All right, quiet, please.
All right, quietly, settle down.
Start whenever you're ready.
You can talk till doomsday, but I'm not going to divorce Doug, ever.
Then he'll have to divorce you. I'm sure he has grounds for divorce, Norma.
Possibly. But before I see him marrying a conniving, greedy would-be like you,
You'll what?
I'll kill you.
Cut. Miss Dorn, you aren't giving the same reading you did before. It's wishy-washy, like you don't believe what you're saying.
I'm sorry. If we had that knife,
Hello, boys and girls, and Mr. Lundberg. Your suspense is over. I have brought you the missing scene.
Oh, Craig, let me see.
Oh, it's high time. We shoot those tomorrow.
Here you are. And a copy for you, Miss Dorn. Oh, I forgot. Your part doesn't include these scenes.
Give them to me.
Oh, he hides the knife. I was sure he'd throw it overboard.
Hides it where?
Read there. Doug comes out of deckhouse, looks quickly around to see if anyone's near. Then he steps swiftly to the figurehead of the ship.
What figure? Oh, that woman right there on the front of the ship?
Yes, on the prow. They always had them on old sailing ships. A figure carved right out of the ship itself.
Doug hides it in the figurehead?
Don't you see how the wood is cracked open? The storms did that. He puts the knife deep in the crack. See? The insert shot. Doug's hand inserts knife and cap.
Oh,
I knew then how Craig planned to trap me. He had hidden the knife in the figurehead 20 years ago in that very place. In all those years when I had forgotten him, he hadn't forgotten. He planned his revenge step by step. The script, selling the lady for a movie set, planned it to this day. The actor playing Doug would walk across the deck to put the knife in its hiding place. He'd reach deep into the cavity where the wood had rotted away. And he'd find another knife already there. The one with my name engraved on it.
Right after the stabbing scene.
Yeah.
Miss Dorn. What are you looking for?
She's checking to see if you really could hide a knife in that thing.
Ingenious, isn't it, Miss Dorn? The minute I saw it, I thought it
it was a great hiding place.
Yes. The only sure hiding place on the ship, Craig.
Find anything, Mr. Orr?
Yes. I did find something.
Oh, the knife. Now, who could have put it there? Does it fit your hand comfortably, Miss Dawn? Do you think you'd be able to kill somebody with it? Act the part in the picture, I mean.
Stop it, Craig. Stop it.
You look quite terrifying this way with that knife. Maybe you're playing the wrong part. Maybe you should be the murderess.
Stop it, Craig. Keep it away from me.
Oh, don't lose your head, Lily. This isn't... Give me that.
No! You put it there, didn't you?
Yes, but I... Lily! No, this wasn't Lily. I only...
Whatever! She's killed him!
Somebody call the police!
I won't try to get away. I killed him, and I don't care what I have to pay.
No.
I don't care now if you'll find my name on that knife.
Your name?
Go ahead, look at it. The crew gave it to me when I was in the Unforeseen. It was my first big part. Look at it. The gold plate says Lily Dawn.
Oh, it says nothing. This is just a knife. We had it made up for the picture.
That's all it was.
No.
Your name on any knife. It's sure not on this one.
It's on the other one. The one Craig threw into the sea. He said we would wed ourselves to the sea.
Tonight, the Philip Morris Playhouse presented The Lady from the Sea, produced, edited, and directed by William Spear. Our star, Marlena Dietrich, will be back in a moment for a curtain call.
You know, Miss Dietrich, this is the first Friday since the beginning of our Philip Morris Playhouse that I thought would never end.
Why, Johnny, what an unflattering thing to say.
Oh, what I mean is that ever since rehearsal at 1:30 this afternoon, the ushers have been neglecting to direct people to their respective destinations. The sound men have forgotten to load their revolvers. And every man on the cast has missed his cues. All because of your glamorous presence.
Well, thank you very much, Johnny. I enjoyed every minute of it. What is on the program for next Friday night?
Next Friday, we're going from glamour to the great Gildersleeve, who deserts comedy for menace. But before you go, may I present you with this carton of Philip Morris cigarettes as our thanks for your exciting performance.
Thank you very much, Johnny. Good night.
Good night, Miss Dietrich. This is Johnny again, reminding you, if you're tired of cigarette hangover, call for the one cigarette that gives you a milder, fresher, cleaner smoke. Yes, call for Philip Morris.
And now, goodbye, Johnny. See you next Friday, same time, same station, when once again we will present the Philip Morris Playhouse, starring Hal Perry, the great Gildersleeve. Until then...
Truth is stranger than fiction. And this is the proof. This is Ripley's. Believe it or not.
The first air express delivery was made 955 years ago. The Caliph Aziz of Cairo sent a rush order for cherries to the town of Baalbek. 600 pigeons made the delivery, believe it or not. In a moment, I'll tell you the unusual story of a caliph who counted the days he was happy. The Caliph Abdurrahman III ruled the most powerful empire in the world for 49 years. He had an annual income of $336 million. He had 6,321 wives, the most beautiful women of his empire. He was wise and led a life of fabulous magnificence. Yet in his will, he wrote, "All during my long and glorious reign, I have counted the days when I enjoyed complete happiness and found them to have numbered only 141. Believe it or not."
This is Ronald Coleman, inviting you to radio's most dramatic half hour, Favorite Story. Somewhere in the archives of the Paris police, there's a story about a vanishing lady and a hotel room that disappears into thin air. By word of mouth, this tale has traveled around the world. Many a time has this yarn been spun on shipboard across the seven seas, in clubs, around campfires, and in a score of different languages. Many accounts of it have been set down, one by Mrs. Belloc Lowndes, and more recently by the late Alexander Wolcott. There was even a scholarly essay published about it, which claimed that the reason for the international fascination of this legend was that it's a common nightmare, shared by people in every part of the world. George Burns and Gracie Allen have long been mystery fans, and they told us the mystery legend which has intrigued them most is this week's favorite story. As our terrified young heroine, we present one of your favorite actresses, Janet Waldo. Now, if you wish, you may turn down the lights and listen to the mystery of room 323.
Again. The same one. Why must I relive that awful day over and over? It happened so long ago. But I still wake up at night thinking about it, screaming. Do you wonder why I scream? Do you wonder why one day in my life has caused this terror I cannot lose? Then listen. And put yourself in my place. We'd lived in India for 10 years, my mother, my father, and I. Dad was a representative of an American firm in the district north of Madras. He traveled a great deal in strange territory. One day, we received word that my father had died quite suddenly, somewhere in the wilds of the hill country. The officials were so mysterious about it, we thought maybe they could be wrong. We waited months. We sent a party into the hills. They came back with ample proof. My father was dead. So Mother and I started for home. During the long, monotonous voyage through the Suez and across the hot Mediterranean, Mother was ill in her stateroom. She assured me it was only grief and seasickness, so I never called the ship's doctor. She was so much better when we reached Marseille that Mother suggested a side trip to Paris. We were so close and I'd never seen that great city. I remember how she laughed for the first time in so many weeks. Laughed at the longing look in my eyes. Paris. To a young girl it was a magic word. Paris. Paris. It was the opening day of the Great Paris Exposition. What a time to be arriving in the Queen's City. We pushed our way through the crowds to our hotel, L'Hôtel Marquis. Now, just sit right down in this easy chair, Mother.
Oh, thank you, Ellen. Don't worry about me.
I'll take care of everything. Before you know it, we'll be in a nice, comfortable room. This looks like a very friendly hotel. I'll go register.
Bonjour, mademoiselle.
You do speak English, don't you?
Oh, but yes, mademoiselle. It is a special service to our British and American guests.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm afraid I have a little difficulty. We wired for reservations from Marseille. The name is Roberts.
Oh, yes, here we are, a party of two. We have reserved a very lovely room for Mademoiselle Roberts. Room 323. Would you register here, please?
Yes. There.
Thank you, Mademoiselle Roberts.
Our baggage will be arriving from the station. Would you have it sent up, please?
Oh, a pleasure. Enjoy your stay in Paris, Mademoiselle.
Oh, thank you.
Chasseur, ces dames au 323.
We're all set, Mother. And they were very nice.
Yes.
What? You're ill, Mother.
Just
Let me catch my breath. I'm certain I'll be fine in a moment. Oh, what a pity I have to be a burden on you, especially your first day in Paris. I helped Mother into the elevator. We traveled up to the third floor. I remembered the elevator operator. He was a tremendous man with the kind of warm, jolly face you usually find on fat people. He seemed concerned. He was nice enough to help me support Mother as we walked toward our room. Room 323. Here's our room, Mother. Oh, thank you very much, sir. Merci beaucoup. There we are. Now just slip off your shoes and take a nice sweet nap, right? Ellen, I don't mean to alarm you, dear, but you'd better phone for a doctor. I quickly phoned the desk. They told me there was a house doctor and that he'd be up in a moment. I made Mother as comfortable as I knew how. While she was resting, I had an opportunity to examine the room. It was an unusual room, one you couldn't easily forget. The wallpaper was red, almost blood red. The furniture was Louis XIV. The chandelier was glass with pendants of crystal hanging down which looked like large icicles. The carpet was cream-colored. There are moments in our lives when impressions are keener than ever. And I knew this room so well, I could have drawn a picture of it. It was the kind of room nobody could forget. Yes?
C'est le médecin, mademoiselle.
Oh, what? Oh, come in, doctor. No. Mother hasn't been well, but she's been fine for the last few days.
Huh?
Then suddenly she took sick again this noon.
Mm-hmm. Ah, oui. Open the eyes, madame. Mm-hmm. Now the mouth. Fièvre très forte, cœur très affaibli. Oh non, alors, pas ça. Que faire mademoiselle, my English is not too good, so I speak to you avec difficulty. It is very necessary for you to get medicine, a very special medicine.
Well, anything at all, of course.
It is a long way from here. It is at the place where I live.
Well, can I phone for it or send a messenger?
Oh, this is not possible. I will give you the direction and a note for my wife. It will better be if you go you yourself.
Oh, I don't like to leave Mother.
Oh, I will stay with your mother, yes. Here. There is a carriage just outside the door of the hotel. Give this note to the driver. He will take you to the house. Alors, retiens cette demoiselle le plus longtemps possible. Here is another note for my wife. She will prepare the medicine. Now, quickly, go.
Well,
it is urgent. It is very necessary. Go, go.
I hesitated for just an instant. Mother seemed to be in pain. I had to go. I ran for the elevator. The fat operator sensed I was in a hurry and the car sped to the ground floor. I ran out into the street. The carriage was there. I handed the driver the note. We started through the crowded streets. It was at the height of afternoon traffic and we seemed to crawl. The trip took hours. We wound through every back alley in Paris. I seemed to lose all sense of direction. The wheels of the carriage seemed to be going slower and slower. I thought I'd go crazy. Hurry! Oh, please, hurry! The snail pace of the carriage made me want to scream. It was a calculated monotony, slow torture. It's very important that you hurry. Please, please, please! At last we came to the doctor's house. I rushed up the stairs. Anybody home? Oh, please come to the door.
Oui?
Here's a note from the doctor. Are you his wife?
Entrez, s'il vous plaît.
I followed her into a sitting room and she motioned me to a chair. I waited. I started to count my heartbeats. Every breath I took was a clock tick. How long could it take to fill a prescription? The first 10 minutes felt like 10 years. The next 10 minutes seemed like an eternity. After a half hour of waiting, I couldn't stand it any longer. Where are you? Where's the medicine? Where did you go? My mother is sick. I need that medicine for her. Please, please. The house seemed to be completely deserted. Was I awake? Was this a terrible dream, a nightmare? Help! Help me! It was an hour and 10 minutes after I entered that house before the woman returned to the sitting room.
La medicine, mademoiselle.
She handed me a small wrapped parcel and I rushed from the house. I had told the carriage to wait, but it was gone. I couldn't blame the driver. I ran through the streets looking for a cab, a carriage, anything. I was lost. Finally, I found an old carriage. L'Hôtel Marquis, please, and hurry. It was just a few blocks away. The first driver had taken me in a wide circle completely around Paris. Clutching the medicine in my hand, I rushed in the hotel. I didn't wait for the elevator, but ran up the stairs just as fast as I could. The door was locked. Doctor! Doctor, I'm back with the medicine. Let me in.
Que désirez-vous, mademoiselle?
What are you doing in this room?
Je ne comprends pas, mademoiselle.
Where's my mother?
Pardon?
There was a complete stranger in our room. I quickly glanced at the door. It was room 323. There was no mistake about that. I rushed to the end of the hall. Outside the window, I saw the huge sign. L'Hôtel Marquis. I ran down to the lobby. The same clerk was there. What's happened to my mother?
Pardon, mademoiselle. Nous ne parlons pas l'anglais ici.
Speak English. You spoke English this afternoon. Where's my mother? What's the strange man doing in our room?
Excusez, mademoiselle. Je ne comprends pas.
Where's my mother? Where's my mother?
Je ne comprends pas.
Where's my mother?
Je ne comprends pas, mademoiselle.
We're ready for Act Two of The Mystery of Room 323, the favorite story choice of the famous comedy team, Burns and Allen. Janet Waldo stars as the confused and lost young lady. So we return to the lobby of the Paris Hotel. Let's see if we can unravel the mystery of Room 323.
I stood at the desk of L'Hôtel Marquis, pounding my fists. The clerk looked at me archly as if I were a child. A few hours earlier, the same clerk, the very same clerk, had spoken such good English. Now he just stood there saying...
Je ne comprends pas.
Don't say that. Don't keep saying that.
Je ne comprends pas, mademoiselle.
I looked at him, begging him to understand me. His eyes were cold. The elevator boy... The fat one. He'd remember. He was kind to me before. He'd help me now. I rushed toward the elevator and rang the bell. Hurry. Oh, please, hurry. The elevator descended so slowly. Have you ever waited a whole lifetime for an elevator?
Mademoiselle?
The elevator boy was thin. Thin as a rail. There's been some mistake. Some terrible mistake. It's possible I went to the wrong room. I must get this medicine to my mother. The doctor said it was urgent. When we reached the third floor, I rushed to the room. 323. 323. Here. Mother! Doctor!
Une minute! Une minute!
A man. A man's voice, not the doctor's. Oh, please! Please!
Mademoiselle, il n'y a personne. Seulement moi. Qu'est-ce que vous désirez?
The same man stood there in a robe dripping from his bath. I've got to see this room.
Mademoiselle, c'est pas permis.
I shoved my way past him into the room. The wallpaper was green, not red like it was before. The furniture was modern. The carpet was different. There was no chandelier. The whole room was changed. And no sign anywhere of my mother or of the doctor. Then I thought I was out of my mind. I turned to the man. I needed help. I needed help so desperately. Monsieur, help me. Do you know, is there another Hotel Marquis in Paris that looks just like this one? Something's happened to my mother. I'm alone in Paris. Please try to understand me. Please try to help me.
Mademoiselle, connaissez-vous un peu de français?
Could I say it? Could I shape the words? Ma mère.
Votre mère.
Et malade.
Et malade.
Oh, I don't know the words. Est-ce que...
Est-ce qu'il y a...
Un autre hôtel en Paris de la nom de Marquis?
Nom de Marquis? Je ne comprends pas. Un autre hôtel?
Oh, hôtel, Lord in heaven. Somehow I found my way back to the lobby, feeling the way with my feet, not seeing because of the blur of tears. I knew I had to get control of myself. The register. This noon I signed the register. I didn't wait to ask. I didn't try to struggle with my bad French. I just walked up to the desk and grabbed the book.
Mademoiselle, je vous en prie.
My name was not in the register. You, clerk. I registered in this book. I remember distinctly. You were very gracious. What have you done with it? Tell me, for the love of heaven, tell me. He just stood there looking at me, shrugging, bowing, with the expression on his face that he didn't understand a thing I was saying. It must have been the wrong hotel. But how could I find the right one? The doctor. If I could find the doctor, he could tell me where the hotel was. His name would surely be on the medicine. Quickly, I tore off the paper wrapping. The medicine. I had traveled halfway around Paris to get. Was just a bar of soap. I don't know how I ever managed to get to the office of the American Consul. I remember people laughing, music in the streets. I remember stopping people who looked like Americans or Englishmen and trying to explain. But who was interested in a young girl looking for a lost old lady on carnival night in Paris? If I could find one kind face, someone to help me get rid of this nightmare. The office of the American Consul was locked for the night. It was just by chance that a young assistant had returned for some papers. Feverishly, I told him my story.
You're going to be all right. You're just overwrought.
I'm not overwrought. Oh, you must believe me. Tell me, is there another Hotel Marquis in Paris? One that looks just like the other one?
No, there's just one.
Well, then what could have happened? What? Help me, please.
You're certain of the room number, 323.
Yes, I remember it distinctly. Three has always been my lucky number. Lucky.
Well, could it have been 333 or 233 or 332?
No, it was 323. I remember the rhythm of it. Well, I know you think I'm out of my mind, but this happened. And don't you understand? Something criminal has happened. This isn't just the lapse of memory by a silly girl. They sent me halfway around Paris for a cake of soap. Why?
If we can wait until morning, I'm certain the ambassador will get the entire Paris police on this.
We can't wait until tomorrow. Something's happened to my mother. Please, please, please help me find her.
Miss Roberts, I believe you. And I'm going to do what I can to help you.
We went back to the hotel. The clerk gave us nothing but a shrug and a blank stare. So we went to the police. The young consul attaché spoke to them for a long time, arguing with them, pleading with them in my behalf. Finally, he gave up and turned to me. What did they say?
Habeas corpus, or the French equivalent. Show them a body or a crime committed and they'll go to work.
But my mother is missing, disappeared. Surely the police can do something about that.
Well, they've put her name and description under missing persons.
Put down her name!
Miss Roberts, I see only one way to attack this problem. I'm going to believe you completely. I'm going to go along with you on everything you've said.
You must.
Fine. Then let's take the simplest ingredient of your story. Room 323 at L'Hôtel Marquis had red wallpaper.
Yes.
That paper is now green. If that premise is accurate, there's a paper hanger involved in this someplace, and we're going to find him.
I guess we woke every paper hanger in Paris. The consul attaché pounded questions at them. It was frustrating. We kept running up blind alleys until... at last we found a decorator
who protested
too much.
No, no, absolutely not.
This one knows something about this, all right. Listen, you. Je suis de l'ambassade américaine. Vous avez tapissé une pièce de l'hôtel Marquis.
No, no, no.
Keep after him. He looks as if he knows something.
I'm going to try some money. 1,000 francs ought to do it. Écoutez. Est-ce que vous avez travaillé cet après-midi à l'hôtel Marquis?
No, monsieur.
I don't know why he's holding back. Voici 1,000 francs.
Mais le directeur de l'hôtel m'a dit que pour le bien de tout Paris, je ne dois rien dire.
What did he say?
He did it. They told him not to talk.
Mais je n'étais pas seul, vous comprenez. Il y en avait d'autres avec moi.
There were other men working there, too.
Well, then you see it did happen. But why? Why?
We're going back to that hotel, and that's what we're going to find out.
The consul attaché confronted the clerk with the facts. The paper hanger had admitted changing the furnishings of room 323 in a hurry during the time I was gone. The clerk sighed and motioned us into a room. He spoke very quietly, almost in a whisper, his eyes averted.
Monsieur, que de millions et de millions de francs.
He speaks English. Make him speak English.
Very well, mademoiselle. I wished only to spare you.
Spare me? What's happened? Tell me quickly. Where's my mother?
Permit me to say something first. You understand that millions and millions of francs have been spent to attract tourists to Paris for the exposition.
Where's my mother?
If news of your mother's sickness leaked out, Paris would be emptied in the space of an hour. We would all be ruined.
I don't understand.
Where's my mother?
She's dead. She died a few minutes after you left the hotel. It was necessary to do something drastic.
You killed her.
Oh, no, no. She died peacefully and naturally. The doctor knew the moment he entered your room how sick she was. And that is why he sent you away.
But the room, the furnishings...
We changed them, monsieur. We did everything to make the young lady think she never came here.
But why? What was wrong with my mother?
Can you tell us?
La peste.
La peste?
What does that mean? Tell me, tell me.
Miss Roberts, your mother died of the Black Plague.
And now you know. Now you know why in the dead of night I wake up shivering, screaming.
Well, that's the mystery of room 323, one of the most famous legends of the century. Many researchers into the realms of the mysterious claim it's a true story. Alexander Wolcott even traced it down to an actual newspaper account, published in the summer of 1889. Well, whether fact or fiction, it's still a great yarn. And we want to thank our star, Janet Waldo, Claude Sweeten, who composed the score, and George Burns and Gracie Allen, who named it their favorite story.
How dear to this heart are the scenes of my childhood when fond recollection presents them to view. The orchard, the meadow, the deep tangled wildwood, and every loved spot which my infancy knew. So, next week on Favorite Story, Mark Twain's Tom Sawyer. This famous saga of the Mississippi has been chosen by Broadway's actress-playwright Miss Ruth Gordon as her favorite story. We hope you'll be listening.
That's the Relic Radio Show for this week. Hope you enjoyed the stories today. You can find past episodes of this show at relicradio.com, alongside links to all the other shows, forum, Facebook page, Shoutcast stream, everything else Relic Radio has to offer is linked to right on the front page of relicradio.com. If you'd like to help support this and all the shows, you can do so from the website as well. I certainly appreciate it if you're able to help out. Thank you very much to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Tuesday with another episode of the Relic Radio Show.